I'd be confused myself. Now, this is the end of the vision proper. From here on, it's prophecy in the common sense of the word. The ninth verse of this chapter says, "The word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Take of them of the captivity, even of Heldai and of Tobijah, Jediah, which are come from Babylon, and come thou the same day, and go into the house of Josiah the son of Zephaniah." These words or meaning are interesting. My times, Heldai means my times. Tobijah means the goodness of Jehovah. Jediah means he will be gladdened of Jehovah. And Josiah means he will be strengthened of Jehovah. And Zephaniah means he will be learned of Jehovah. Taught, I suppose. Interesting. Notice they all end with that ayah. These last ones especially. "Take silver and gold and make crowns and set them upon the head of Joshua." Remember that Jesus will be crowned with many crowns according to Revelation 19. And it speaks there especially, not here so much, but there as being crowned King of all kings and Lord of all lords. Joshua the son of Josedek, meaning Jehovah is the righteous one, Josedek, the high priest, "and speak unto him, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, Behold, the man whose name is the branch." This is one of the particular titles of Christ. He is the branch. "He shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of the Lord." Now notice this pointedly. This branch shall build the temple of the Lord. We want to read Ezekiel 40 and some of the chapters following. You will see the millennial temple, and whether it means he will supervise it or how it will come about, it will come about because of him. Notice the pronouns and what he will do. "He shall grow up out of his place. He shall build the temple of the Lord. He shall build the temple of the Lord. He shall bear the glory and shall sit upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne, and the council of peace shall be between them both." The pronouns point out the fact that he is the dominant one. And we come back to that thought, he shall build the temple of the Lord. There will be a temple that will evidently be defiled by the image of the Antichrist. That's the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. And it will stand in the holy place. This has been done before. Manasseh, the king of Judah, put a shrine in the temple of the Lord. And Antiochus Epiphanes defiled the temple with an image. And there was great trouble from the Romans. One time they wanted to hang their eagles up in the temple, and the Jews would do anything. They even bared their necks and invited them to kill them, cut their throats. They would do anything rather than have that temple desecrated, though they desecrated it worse than anybody else. But I do emphasize this, that he shall build the temple of the Lord. There will be a temple that we might call the grand millennial temple. And as memorials, no doubt, the sacrifices of old will be reintroduced. And in the book of Ezekiel, the various sacrifices and several of the feasts are mentioned, and that the priests will offer them. In that temple, there is no gold nor silver mentioned. And the cherubim all just have two faces. In the vision that Ezekiel saw, they had four faces. But in the temple, they made cherubim with two faces. Speaks of a lesser picture than was pictured in times of old. And I'll tell you what the face of a cherubim was. You have to prove it by deduction. Do you know what it was? You remember the living creatures had four faces, of a man and an ox, an eagle, and a lion. Now in one of these, it says he had the face of a man and a lion, and an ox, and an eagle. In one of the pictures, he had the face of a man, and a lion, and an eagle, and a cherub. All you have to do is decide which one's left out. Well, the ox was left out. So that's the only way we have of knowing what the face of a cherub was. That you find that in Ezekiel, in the two pictures that he gives us. They were typical beings in the temple, in the tabernacle, rather. And notice this, he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne. There is one high priest from now on. In the Old Testament, the high priest wasn't suffered to continue by reason of death. After Aaron, every high priest received his ministry from somebody else. Then he passed it on to somebody else. Hebrews 7 is the chapter on the priestly ministry of Christ. And there he's a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Melchizedek was the first and the last in his line. He didn't receive his priesthood from anybody, and he didn't pass it on to anybody. He is, as far as the record is concerned, without beginning of days or end of life. Christ isn't without a recorded beginning of days or an end of life, but Melchizedek is, and he doesn't have any recorded parents. Paul said, without father, without mother. You can't find any record of who his father was or who his mother was and what Paul actually means. He didn't have a father that was a priest. And Jesus will be a priest, still a priest in the millennial age. And the council of peace shall be between them both. I believe he means between the two offices of priestly ministry and kingly ministry. The crown shall be to Helam and to Abijah and to Jedaiah and to Hen, the son of Zephaniah, for a memorial in the temple of the Lord. The word hen means grace. It's like one of our female chickens. It's a hen. But the memorial in the temple, no doubt, looks forward to the coming of Christ, who will be the crowned one. They that are far off, no doubt speaking of the Israelites, shall come and build in the temple of the Lord, and ye shall know that the Lord of hosts has sent me unto you. This shall come to pass if you will diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God. There were many that came. There was possibly a near fulfillment. People did come from near and far, and like, for example, in the days of the apostles, on the day of Pentecost, there were people out of every nation under heaven in Jerusalem to keep that feast. That's recorded in the book of Acts, the second chapter, and I believe there were about 17 different languages that they heard on that day. I heard a young man one time, he was very much excited about a Pentecostal preacher. He said, he'll hit that platform speaking in 50 different languages at once. Well, on that day, they did speak in quite a bunch of languages. But they weren't just a bedlam. There was somebody there that understood each language, though that isn't always the case. But people did come and build, but later there will come a time when the world will take an interest in the temple. Today, well, I can name you the location of the headquarters of several churches. There are two or three headquarters in Springfield, Missouri, one in Cleveland, Tennessee, one in Anderson, Indiana, one in Rome, and I know of, or maybe others. But in that day, the things of God will be centered in one place, and that will be in Jerusalem. On to chapter 7. Came to pass in the fourth year of King Darius that the word of the Lord came unto Zerubbabel in the fourth day of the ninth month, even in Chislev. And again you will notice now it's not a vision, it is the word of the Lord coming directly to him. When they had sent unto the house of God the revised version, not the revised standard version, but the older revised version says the men of Bethel came to the house of God, Sherezer and Regimelech, and their men to pray before the Lord and to speak unto the priests which were in the house of the Lord of hosts and to the prophets, saying, should I weep in the fifth month and separate myself as I have done in these so many years? And then came the word of the Lord of hosts unto me, saying, speak unto all the people of the land and to the priests, saying, when ye fasted and mourned in the fifth and seventh month, even those 70 years did ye at all fast unto me, even to me. Now the fifth month commemorated the burning of the temple, and the seventh month, these two particular feasts, there was a man by the name of Gedaliah that was appointed to take care of the Jews, and he was vilely murdered. Now notice this, did you fast even unto me? Now I want to turn just a moment to Malachi. And let us see how low religion could sink and did sink in those days. The seventh verse, the Lord said, Malachi 1, I'm sorry, ye offer polluted bread upon mine altar, and ye say, wherein have we polluted thee? In that ye say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. Now, isn't that characteristic Some years ago, there was a bunch of girls stayed out of youth camp. They were at youth camp, but they stayed in their cabins, and I went to them and remonstrated. One of them said, "Well, it's so boring." Now, where was the trouble, with the girl or with the camp? If you offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? And if you offer the lame and sick, is it not evil? Offer it now unto the governor. Will he be pleased with thee? And the 10th verse, who is there even among you that would shut the doors for naught, have to be paid to get them to shut the doors of the house of the Lord? Neither do you kindle the fire on mine altar for naught. I have no pleasure in you, saith the Lord of hosts. The 12th verse, speaking of his name, ye have profaned it, in that ye say, the table of the Lord is polluted. And in the 13th verse, ye said also, behold, what a weariness it is. This word means what a trouble it is. And that's the way they fasted. Now notice Isaiah 1. This first chapter of Isaiah is pretty rough in being spoken to God's professing people. 11th verse, to what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices unto me, saith the Lord? I am full of the burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed beasts, and I delight not in the blood of bullocks or of lambs or of he-goats. When you come to appear before me, who hath required this at your hand to tread my courts? Bring no more vain oblations. Notice the word vain. Incense is an abomination unto me, the new moons and the Sabbaths, the calling of assemblies, I cannot away with it. It is iniquity, even the solemn meeting. Your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hateth. They are a trouble unto me. I am weary to bear them. And when you spread forth your hands, that's in prayer, I will hide mine eyes from you. Yea, when you make many prayers, I will not hear. Your hands are full of blood. Then he said he would cleanse their sins in the 18th verse. But what I want you to notice is that what the Lord is striking out against here in Zechariah is the unreality of it. I knew one woman that fasted herself to death and brought a great reproach. She was going to fast till God sent a great revival. Well, did the Bible ever say, thou shalt fast until the Lord sends a revival? It just doesn't teach that, does it? It was the formality, the unreality of things, the just going through a form like a woman in no particular reflections on this denomination, but she said, I'm a Baptist because my mother was. Is that a good enough reason? No, it isn't. Let's be what we are because of our decision. And Isaiah 58 shows the fast that the Lord has chosen. And he said, it's not to hide yourself from your flesh. Did you fast unto me, even to me? And when you did eat and when you did drink, did not ye eat for yourselves and drink for yourselves? Should you not hear the words which the Lord hath cried by the former prophets, when Jerusalem was inhabited and in prosperity, and the cities thereof round about her, when men inhabited the south and the plains? And so the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, and here's what he said. Execute true judgment, and show mercy and compassion, every man to his brother. Remember that Jesus said, ye pay tithe of anise and cumin, and you omitted the weightier part of the law, the part that was genuinely important, you have just omitted. It isn't as convenient for me to be merciful to the needy as it is for me to pay tithes of a little bit of cumin, something that I grew in the garden. If you want to be right, show mercy, compassion. Oppress not the widow, nor the fatherless, the stranger, nor the poor. Let none of you imagine evil against his brother in your heart. You remember James said, woe unto you rich, you heaped up treasures in the last days, the marginal says. It'll be a witness against you. You have defrauded men that have robbed your fields. I was reading a book this morning and somebody made a little statement. God pity the rich, the poor can take care of themselves. Or God have mercy on the rich, the poor can take care of themselves. And back in the days when men gave their daughters in marriage, literally, without consulting the daughter, there was a man puzzled over two men. He could have either one of them for his daughter. One of them had a large fortune, but he just didn't amount to anything as a man. And the other one, his fortune wasn't so big, but he was a real personality. And he went and consulted a friend, and the friend said, well, tell you the truth, I'd rather to give my daughter to a man without money than to give my daughter to money without a man. Let none of you imagine evil against his brother in your heart. A man asked me one time if a certain man was a young man, a very young man, was working and making good money. And he said, what does he do with it? I said, I don't know. He said, I'm going to help him spend it. So he sold him a car, got himself into trouble. His boy's sister told him if he didn't return his money and take the car back, she was going to sue him. Well, they refused to hearken and pulled away the shoulder. That's a strange expression. One rendering is they turned a rebellious shoulder. That was what I found by checking up on it. And they stopped their ears that they should not hear. Did you ever try to talk to somebody about the Lord? And maybe he didn't say anything, but he let you know right away that he didn't want to talk about the Lord. Brother Hill and Sister Hill, my wife and I were going out to view something one time, and I knew a family that owned a large restaurant in town. They were friends of mine, but they were Catholic. And the girl was going to go out there and show us where this was, and I started to mention something about the things of the Lord, or did so, and she said, you see that rock over there? She didn't want to talk about the things of the Lord. Yea, they made their hearts as adamant stone, lest they should hear the law and the words which the Lord of hosts has sent in his spirit by the former prophets. Therefore came a great wrath from the Lord of hosts. The 13th verse is very solemn. It's found in its essence in different places. Therefore it has come to pass that as he cried and they would not hear, so they cried and I would not hear, saith the Lord of hosts. This thought is found in the first chapter of Proverbs. But I scattered them with a whirlwind among the nations, whom they knew not. Thus the land was desolate after them, that no man passed through nor returned, for they laid the pleasant land desolate. But the Lord goes on to show that he hasn't changed his thoughts. He says here, thus saith the Lord of hosts. And when you read the Lord of hosts, it means Jehovah of armies. Notice it's in the plural. I was jealous for Zion with great jealousy, and I was jealous for her with great fury. Thus saith the Lord, I am returned unto Zion, and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. Notice what it will be called. We've read of it as the pleasant land. It's the glory of all lands. It's the holy land here. It'll be called a city of truth. Jerusalem will be called the city of truth, because the truth will go out from there. And the mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. Now, people may say that this is just dreaming, but I'll tell you, it's going to come to pass. Jesus Christ will have charge of it. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, there shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for very age. As a whole today, streets are not safe because of traffic and because of thugs, thieves, and what have you. In that day, everything will be safe. I had talked to a man from Eastern Texas some time ago, and he told me that in that town, nobody locks their doors. It'd be interesting to live there. Maybe I'd be out of place. I've locked my door for so long. There is a little town near us. Somebody told me, I guarantee you, if you lost a $20 bill there and somebody found it that knew who you were, you'd get it back. I'd wonder about it. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. This is a prophetic utterance. It had a measure of fulfillment in a later day, but it will have a greater time of fulfillment in the day to come. And in the millennial age, of course, Isaiah 65:20 says that the child should die at 100 years of age. Like, poor little thing, he didn't live to be very old. There was his father, he lived to be 700. That's the way it would have been back in the days of Noah, I mean of Adam and those that followed him. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, if it be marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of this people in these days, should it also be marvelous in mine eyes, saith the Lord of hosts. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country. He did that in a measure then. He will do it in a much greater measure in a time to come. I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God in truth and in righteousness. And we'll pause there now. Verse of this 8th chapter we have. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, let your hands be strong, ye that hear in these days these words by the mouth of the prophets. which were in the day that the foundation of the house of the Lord of hosts was laid, that the temple might be built. Notice, thus saith the Lord of hosts, let your hands be strong. I might just throw this in, that the Lord never discourages you. You will have pangs of discouragement, but he won't do it. He might tell you facts. He might tell you like he told Paul when he said, they won't receive your testimony concerning me, and I'll send you four hints unto the Gentiles. But that was just telling him facts. The 10th verse shows a condition, an economic condition, that developed not just because of mismanagement of national affairs, but because the Lord brought it about. Before these days, there was no hire for man, nor any hire for beast. Neither was there any peace to him that went out or came in because of the affliction, for I set all men, every one against his neighbor. Unemployment seemed to be like some people say it is today. But now I will not be under the residue of this people as in the former days, saith the Lord of hosts. For the seed shall be prosperous, the vine shall give her fruit, and the ground shall give her increase, and the heavens shall give their dew, and I will cause the remnant of this people to possess all these things. I'm going to do it. And it shall come to pass that as you were a curse among the heathen, O house of Judah and house of Israel, so will I save you, and ye shall be a blessing. Fear not, but let your hands be strong. Good advice, and it comes or came from the Lord. Again, thus saith the Lord of hosts, as I thought to punish you when your fathers provoked me to wrath, saith the Lord of hosts, and I repented not. He sent them into captivity, and he did punish them. So again have I thought in these days to do well unto Jerusalem and to the house of Judah. Fear ye not. How often that expression, fear not, occurs in the Bible. When the disciples became so alarmed, when Jesus was walking across the waters, he said, fear not, it is I. And with the Lord with us, I guess we do not have to fear anything other than God. In the 13th chapter of Hebrews, we have this statement. The 5th verse, let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have, for he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. I wish there were a way to translate the last part of that 5th verse literally. The way you make anything positive in Greek is to use the negative or more negatives, and there are 5 negatives. I will not, I will not, I will not leave. Check it sometime in, I don't exactly represent the emphatic diglot anymore, the Russellites got hold of it and ruined it. But check it in a literal rendering, not in a translation. When you translate it into English, it makes sense. To say, I will not, I will not, that just isn't good English, is it? So that we may boldly say, now notice this, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me. That's quite a statement, isn't it? I will not fear what man shall do unto me. These are the things that ye shall do. Speak ye every man the truth to his neighbor, execute the judgment of truth, and peace in your gates. Let none of you imagine evil in your hearts against his neighbor, and love no false oath, for all these are the things that I hate, saith the Lord of hosts, or saith the Lord. Now I'll tell you, the Lord knows how to hate. He loves us, but David said, do not I hate them with a perfect hatred? Now he's still talking to these people that came to inquire about the fast. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the fast of the 4th month. This was the taking of Jerusalem, and the fast of the 5th, and the fast of the 7th, and the fast of the 10th. Now we looked at these two middle ones. The 10th was the beginning of the siege. Shall be to the house of Judah joy and gladness and cheerful feasts. Therefore love the truth and peace. People do have the idea that we're to be gloomy all the time. This isn't true. There are times, as Peter said, when you may be in heaviness through manifold temptation. There may be trials. We may lose a loved one. And in such cases, we're told to weep with those that weep. But we're also told to rejoice with those that rejoice. And a man was asked one time why he wrote religious songs. Why do you write such cheerful songs? He said, well, the Lord has done so many things for me, I'm just cheerful. He said, if he's given me a cheerful heart, he'll forgive me if I write cheerful songs. Well, I like things that are cheerful. I know that there are times when we all may have reason to be gloomy. I have been in the midst of very terrible sorrow at times in life. But you look back for a moment. David said, O Absalom, my son, Absalom, my son, would God I had died for thee. But he came back to a place of cheerfulness. And Job speaks, why is life given to him that is sorrowful of spirit, and he wanted to die rather than live? And I can understand. Suppose you had 10 children, and every one of them died in one day. Suppose everything that you own perished in a day. What do you have left in this life? An Indian who allied himself with the white people one time, and he had several children. In an uprising, some of the white army killed everyone that belonged to him, and he became very bitter. He said, my blood runs in nobody's veins. And all of this, but God will bring them back. Before Job was through, he was cheerful again. He had a family. He had more property than he had before. So their fast could be a feast. Then again the 20th verse, thus saith the Lord of hosts, it shall yet come to pass that there shall come people and the inhabitants of many cities, and the inhabitants of one city shall go up to another, saying, let us go speedily to pray before the Lord and to seek the Lord of hosts. I will go also. Now I cited you back to the second chapter of the book of Isaiah one time earlier in our lesson. I'm going to turn you back there again for just a moment. Now notice it said that many people would come and say, let's go speedily to the house of the Lord. And the third verse of this second chapter says, and many people shall go and say, come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. And he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And now go to Zechariah 14. This is after the great battle of Armageddon. In the 16th verse of Zechariah 14, and it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, so that Jerusalem is going to become the religious center of the world. And it shall be that whoso will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain, going to be compulsory. And if the family of Egypt go not up and come not that have no rain, there shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And in that day shall there be upon the bells of the horses, that is such a common, ordinary thing as the bells of the horses, holiness unto the Lord, and the pots in the Lord's house shall be like the bowls before the altar. Every pot in Jerusalem and in Judah shall be holiness unto the Lord of hosts, and all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and seethe, that is, boil therein, that they there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of the Lord. And so it's going to be a great change. Notice that 21st verse, let us go speedily to pray before the Lord and to seek the Lord of hosts. I will go also. I wonder if our present speedy mode of transportation will not be continued. This we do not know. You know, of course, that two men crossed the Atlantic Ocean in 2 hours in a plane, and this is the exception. It was a record, of course. But with the devil gone and the enemies gone and so on, that would put us in Jerusalem in about 3 hours. Let's get over there quickly and pray before the Lord. To pray, notice what it's about, to pray before the Lord. I can remember Sister Bodie saying, well, let's not waste time, let's pray, when we had gotten to church a little bit early. Yea, many people and strong nations, and strong nations, not little bitty nations, the Jews have been considered a weak nation by many, shall come to seek the Lord of hosts in Jerusalem and to pray before the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold out of all languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, or we have heard that God is with you. Now back in the Isaiah, the 4th chapter, in the 1st verse, you read of 7 women taking hold of the coattail of 1 man and saying, we'll go with you to take away our reproach. Now I think that will simply be that so many people will be destroyed in war. There won't be enough men to go around. But this is a different picture. It's people going with the Jew before we have heard that God is with you. And nowadays, if they think you're religious, they turn their backs on you, but it will change then. Now, here are some pictures that had a partial fulfillment, I feel, and will have a greater fulfillment. The burden of the word of the Lord in the land of Hadrach and Damascus shall be the rest. Hadrach and Damascus shall be the rest thereof, when the eyes of men, as of all the tribes of Israel, shall be toward the Lord. Hadrach, Damascus, and Hamath, Tyrus, and Zidon are all mentioned here. And this was more or less the route that Alexander the Great took, but it will probably have a future fulfillment also. Hamath also shall border thereof Tyrus and Zidon, though it be very wise. And Tyrus did build herself a stronghold and heaped up silver as the dust and fine gold as the mire of the street. And they built themselves a fortress that was at different times besieged, one time for 13 years without conquering it. But God predicted that it would be conquered, and Alexander the Great built a causeway. It was built on an island, and he built a causeway out to it and conquered it. And the fourth verse says, the Lord will cast her out, and he will smite her power in the sea, and she shall be devoured with fire. Now you can find how he did that in history if you want to read it. Then he mentions Philistine cities. Ashkelon shall see it and fear. Gaza also shall see it and be very sorrowful. And Ekron. Now I believe it was Gaza that they held out against Alexander the Great. And he had read in the Iliad or the Odyssey, I've forgotten which now, how when they conquered, they took a man and tied thongs through his heels and tied him behind the chariot and drug him around the city. So when he conquered this king, he did this. He changed rapidly. He was a kind of a tender sort of a fellow, but to begin with, but as his success climbed and on, he became cruel, had himself declared a god, and killed his best friend. And he conquered these Philistine cities, but they will look beyond that as we see in just a moment. For her expectations shall be ashamed, and the king shall perish from Gaza, and Ascalon shall not be inhabited. And a bastard shall dwell in Ashdod, and I will cut off the pride of the Philistines. The Philistines were a striking people. They held on to their place in western Palestine for many years. They were Hamitic in descent, that is from Ham. And they were always the bitterest enemies of Israel, and remained so. Goliath was one of them that David fought with. It was Delilah, a Philistine girl, that trapped Samson, and they subjugated Israel so much of the time. But you never find them siding in with Israel at any time. But the Lord said, I'll cut off the pride of the Philistine. Now the Philistines, some of the descendants of Ham, gave Palestine both of its names. Ham had a son named Canaan, and he gave his name to it. And then these Philistines were descended from the Hamites, and the word Philistine, Palestine, comes from the word Philistine. They speak of a religious people, but not a saved people, in type, I mean to say. And he said, I will take away his blood out of his mouth and his abominations from between his teeth. But he that remaineth, even he shall be for our God, and he shall be as a governor in Judah, and Ekron shall as a Jebusite. Jebusa was the Jebusite name for Jerusalem. And a Jebusite would be an inhabitant of Jerusalem. And here it actually infers that perhaps even the Philistines would be brought under the influence of the gospel. Now, I mentioned you never read of their siding in with Israel in any condition that I can recall. It's kind of like the Sadducees. Now, Pharisees, once in a while, one of them would be converted, but you never read of a Sadducee becoming a Christian. They just never did. As a people, we do not know who the Philistines are, just like we do not know anything about the Moabites. Sister Monroe was a missionary in Palestine for a year, and she told me that there was a real dark-complexioned man pointed out to her one time, and someone told her that he was a Moabite. But anyway, let's put it like this. Whether they were Moabite or Ammonite or Jebusite or Philistine, Jesus Christ died for them, and they can be saved. I will encamp about mine house because of the army, because of him that passeth by, and because of him that returneth. Alexander went down that way, and then he came back. I believe it was on this trip that he had himself declared to be a god. And no oppressor shall pass through them any more, for now have I seen with mine eyes. Now, this last statement shows that this has reference really to a future fulfillment, because you see, the oppressor has been in Jerusalem many times since then. The Romans oppressed them after this. The Arabs oppressed the city. The Mohammedans oppressed the city. And so the oppressor means a slave driver. The time will come when that will all end. You notice that I read in the 14th chapter a while ago, or I trust that you noticed it, that it said, there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. The word Canaanite carries the thought of a merchant man. And then we come to one of the clear prophecies of Christ. I trust that you have noticed through that in proportion to his size, Zechariah has much to point out about Christ. Twice he mentions him as the branch. Remember the priest upon the throne. And in this ninth verse, we have him portrayed. We will see him later as the man with the pierced hands and the pierced side. They shall look upon him whom they have pierced. And so we read, rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Again, that thought. It isn't of the Lord that we be miserable. There may be conditions to make us miserable at times. I'm sure all of us have seen some misery and some grief, the loss of a loved one, some serious sickness, the loss of a job. But rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Then we have why. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He is just and having salvation, lowly, and riding upon an ass and upon a colt, the foal of an ass. The word translated lowly means meek, it means mild, it means poor. And I'd like to turn to Matthew 21, 1-10, and see this text fulfilled. I think this is the first text of the scripture that I ever learned to quote. When they drew nigh unto Jerusalem and were come to Bethphage under the Mount of Olives. I'll wait a minute till you turn to it. Matthew 21. I read the first verse. Then sent Jesus two of his disciples in this first verse. Go into the village over against you, and straightway you shall find an ass tied in a colt with her. Loose them and bring them unto me. And if any man say aught unto you, ye shall say, the Lord hath need of them, and straightway he will send them. All this was done that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, saying, tell you the daughter of Zion, behold, thy king cometh unto thee meek, and sitting upon an ass, and a colt, the foal of an ass. And so it had its literal fulfillment. This was Jesus' presentation officially to the Jews. But I'll read the verse again. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. This passivity in the things of God, I do not feel that it pleases God. I think it's so strange. One of the most amazing things that there is to me is how the American people can be perpetually occupied with sports. It's on the air so much that I get disgusted listening. I turn off the radio because I get tired listening to it. What is the great team down in Texas? The Aggies? Somebody, I forgot, I believe that is, but somebody said to me the other day that people get so deeply excited about that which means so little. And notice, he says, rejoice, shout. Your king is going to come riding into Jerusalem on a donkey. My king on a donkey? Doesn't sound very kingly, does it? Thy king cometh. He is just. And he has salvation. He's lowly. He's riding up on an ass and up on a colt, the foal of an ass, and the people did shout. John shows us that there were two great concourses of people. Let us turn to that for just a moment in John 12 and notice how he points out the situation as it actually was. The 12th verse says, on the next day, much people that were come to the feast, when they heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took branches of palm trees and went forth to meet him. Now there was already a large concourse with him coming into Jerusalem, and they heard that he was coming. He must have come slowly. And these two great groups of people met. And in the 13th verse they said, Hosanna, blessed is the King of Israel that cometh in the name of the Lord. And so there must have been an enormous crowd. They said, this is the prophet of Galilee. And of course the leaders of the Jews were greatly put out. Well, he goes on to look to the head again, the Lord does. I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim, the horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow shall be cut off. He shall speak peace unto the heathen, and his dominion shall be from sea even to sea, and from the river even to the ends of the earth. Jesus Christ is going to have possession of the entire world and all of the people in it. And this 10th verse shows this. All the means of war will be cut off because they won't be needed anymore. Thank God for that day. We will be in something so much better. We will be in heaven. But as for thee also, by the blood of thy covenant, I have sent forth thy prisoners out of the pit wherein is no water. Their hopeless condition, like Joseph in the pit of old when his brothers threw him in it. Turn you to the stronghold. The 15th verse says, the Lord of hosts shall defend them. I feel this is the stronghold. Ye prisoners of hope, even today do I declare that I will render double unto thee. Now when you think of us, we're kind of prisoners of hope in this respect, that we're held to that hope. Remember what the prophet said in the 73rd Psalm, whom have I in heaven but thee, and whom on earth beside thee? I imagine he had a lot of friends. We all have friends. But when you come down to brass tacks, to the reality of the thing, what we have is a hope in the coming of Christ. Everything else we do, now, maybe you work. That's a means to an end. You don't want to starve to death. But someday you won't have to have a job. You will be with Christ. That's your hope. Even today do I declare that I will render double unto thee. When they use a figure of speech, when I have bent Judah for me, filled the bow with Ephraim, and raised up thy sons, O Zion, against the sons, O Greece, and made thee as the sword of a mighty man. And the Lord shall be seen over them, and his arrow shall go forth as the lightning, and the Lord God shall blow the trumpet, and shall go forth with whirlwinds of the south. The Lord shall defend them, and they shall devour and subdue with sling stones, and they shall drink and make a noise as the wine. They shall be filled like bowls and as the corners of the altar. A picture, perhaps, of the defense of the Maccabees against the enemy, but also a picture of Christ having charge of them. The 16th verse says, the Lord their God shall save them in that day as the flock of his people. For they shall be as the stones of a crown lifted up as the ensign upon his hand, or his land, rather. And how much it is emphasized what the Lord's people mean to him. They shall be his when he cometh to make up his jewels, Malachi says. So often we forget who we are and we sell ourselves short. How great is his goodness. Blessed be the name of the Lord. It's cold tonight, but warm weather will be back because of God's goodness. A man told this story. Said he was on a train and they were approaching a place where there was going to be a stop, and a man was sitting by him and he said, isn't it wonderful the goodness of the Lord? The Lord, look out at that window, he said. The Lord's given us such a beautiful world to look at. And the man agreed with him, and then the man said, are you a Christian? He said, no. He said, well, you ought to be. Do you mind getting down here and praying with me? And he said, before I knew it, I was praying with him. He said, about that time the train stopped, and he said, the man got off and I rushed to the door and said, at least tell me your name. And he said, my name is D.L. Moody. And he said, from that time on, my life was the life of a Christian. Well, the goodness of God and how great is his beauty. I always think it is so interesting that the prophet Isaiah said, when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. But then he also said, thine eyes shall see the great King in his beauty. And thou art fairer than the children of men, according to the 45th Psalm. Remember in Luke 4, the words of grace. It should read, our version says, the gracious words that proceeded out of his mouth. Now he turns to something in the natural. Ask ye of the Lord rain in the time of the latter rain. So shall the Lord make bright clouds and give them showers of rain to every one grass in the field. Now in the history of Israel, it shows clearly that the Lord has charge of the weather. He said, I made it to rain on one city and not rain on another city. And Elijah said, you remember, or Elisha rather, to the great woman of Shunem, go dwell where you will. The Lord has called for 7 years of famine. Elijah prayed that it wouldn't rain, and it didn't rain for 3.5 years. Samuel said, see, it's harvest time, but I'm going to pray to the Lord, and he's going to send thunder. And he did. He scared the people. So they're told to ask God for rain in the time of the latter rain. Israel had two rainy seasons, one early when they planted their crops And then there had to come a rain to develop the crops. The idols have spoken vanity, and the diviners have seen a lie and have told false dreams. They comfort in vain. You've probably heard of the Indians' rain dance, and there have been people that claim to be able to make rain. And the Lord said, they're crazy. Therefore they went their way as a flock. They were troubled because there was no shepherd. My anger was kindled against the shepherds, and I punished the goats. For the Lord of hosts hath visited his flock, the house of Judah, and hath made them as his goodly horse in the battle. Now, a trained war horse was a remarkable creature. Job pictures him as liking the battle. I understand they were taught to strike with their feet. Out of him, that is out of Israel, came forth the corner, out of him the nail, out of him the battle bow, and out of him every oppressor together. Interesting that in history, these things came from him. Jesus is the cornerstone, emphasized very much. And in Isaiah 22, he's going to be a nail in a sure place that you can hang things on. He carries the responsibility. Out of him, the battle bow. He is the Lord of hosts, and out of him, every oppressor. This word oppressor means to reign or rule. A ruler, a king of kings is one meaning of the word. And our translators translated it oppressor. I think this may be just a little bit misleading. They shall be as mighty men which tread down their enemies in the mire of the streets. Could you tell me somebody, incidentally a woman, that was trodden down in the mire of the streets in the Bible? Jezebel, of course. The chariots ran over her and the dogs ate her. They will be trodden as mire in the streets. I don't know if you're old enough to remember the streets when there was not even gravel on them in some of the small towns or not. I knew a man in Oklahoma. He was well up in years. He was wealthy, and he used to use a wagon for drayage, hauling large loads at a distance. And he said there was one hill that it was raining. There wasn't any team that could pull the wagon up it. They had just everybody stopped and everybody double-teamed up that. And the streets just became a quagmire. And we can't quite imagine what it was like when there was no sewage disposal and what a street would be like in such a situation. But they would become as enemies in the mire of the streets in the battle, and they shall fight because the Lord is with them, and the riders on horses shall be confounded. I will strengthen the house of Judah. The Lord is saying what he will do in that day. I will save the house of Joseph, and I will bring them. Notice the capital I's 6 times in this verse. I will strengthen the house of Judah. I will save the house of Joseph. I will bring them again to place them. For I have mercy upon them, and they shall be as though I had not cast them off. For I am the Lord their God, and will hear them. Glad for God's interest, and he emphasizes himself. They of Ephraim shall be like a mighty man, and their heart shall rejoice as through wine. Yea, their children shall see it and be glad. Their heart shall rejoice in the Lord. Ultimately, that is what we have to rejoice in. How light things can be. Remember the statement in the book of Ecclesiastes that reads something like this. Rejoice, O young man, in thy Creator in the days of thy youth, ere the day shall come when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. And when you get older, what do you want? I read a little article some time ago. A woman said to her husband, to her father, her aged father, what shall I get you for Christmas? He said, nothing. She said, but that's what I got you last year. He said, well, I still have it. But what could you get for him? He wouldn't want a new suit, new tie, or a new car. I'm just speaking of things in general. But their heart shall rejoice in the Lord. And the time does come in life when that's about the only real source of joy. I knew a man, a good man. He had 7 children. I didn't hear him say this, but his children all lived in the same town. All of them were married. And I was in his home one time, and he had one child at that time that wasn't married. And before we went to bed, every child of his family had been in the house. Somebody said to him one time, I guess you're glad to see your children come. He said, yes, glad to see them come and glad to see them go. So then the Lord said, I will hiss for them like you hiss for a dog. Whistle, the word means whistle. It means other things too. And gather them, for I have redeemed them, and they shall increase as they have increased. Grow into a large people. And I will sow them among the people, and they shall remember me in far countries, and they shall live with their children and turn again. They will come back toward Jerusalem. I will bring them again also out of the land of Egypt, and gather them out of Assyria. I will bring them into the land of Gilead and Lebanon, and place shall not be found for them. They will increase very rapidly, and when things are in the hands of the Lord again in this world, and Israel is back in their place, people won't die off like they do now. Now, I had a man pointed out to me one time when I was about 16 years old. He was sitting just on the street with his head kind of down, as if he didn't have an interest in the world. He was 106 years old. And if everybody lived to be 106, we'd have a much bigger population, wouldn't we? Well, in that day, it will be different. Life will revive. And the Lord is going to gather his ancient people back to the land. Now, we're reading about them. In the New Testament, we read more of the church that involves us. And we can find lessons and illustrations, but we're not here. The church isn't here. He shall pass through the sea with affliction, or the sea of affliction would be perhaps a better translation, and shall smite the waves in the sea, and all the deeps of the river shall dry up, and the pride of Assyria shall be brought down, and the scepter of Egypt shall depart away. These were the foremost enemies of Israel at times in their history, and it pictures this in reality, that all of their enemies are going to be brought down. And when you think of the fact that it is Satan himself that stirs people up so much of the time, James said to the people to whom he was writing, "From whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not of the lusts that war in your members, the desires?" And this is what starts wars. People want things. You can watch a war start. I was in the Bible school over on Harrison when the Germans marched into Poland on Labor Day 1939, and Brother Copley made the statement to me, "I feel a foreboding in my spirit." And as you know, the war ran on until in the spring or summer of 45, when practically all the world was involved, and the devil stirred it up, and men died like flies. They said that 39 million people died. Later on, they upped that. I do not know what the figure is estimated now. But when the devil is bound, the old man will still be here, but there won't be someone around to fan him into flame and to stir up wrong kinds of appetites and desires. The Lord said, "I will strengthen them in the Lord, and they shall walk up and down in his name, saith the Lord." And when it saith the Lord, well, it'll come to pass, won't it?